Welcome to another episode of the For Legal English podcast. Today, we're delving into the financial realm, demystifying complex terms for legal professionals around the world. Whether you're navigating loan agreements, opening up a new bank account, or unraveling the intricacies of corporate finance, this episode is your guide. Join us as we make sense of dollars and cents, empowering you with legal English skills needed to thrive in the global financial landscape. Stay tuned for a deep dive into financial literacy that transcends borders. Let's be about it. The For Legal English podcast is now in session. Welcome to the For Legal English podcast. This is the show for lawyers, law students, and other professionals from all over the world who want to improve both their legal English and legal knowledge. In this podcast, we discuss different legal topics, such as law in the news, law in practice, legal writing, legal movies, and other issues. This podcast does not constitute legal advice. If you need legal advice, consult an attorney. You can check out our blog articles, available courses, and the show notes for this episode on our website. That's four is in the number four, legalenglish, no spaces or dashes, .com. forlegalenglish.com. I'm Timothy Barrett, your host. I'm a former practicing attorney from the United States, more recently a law professor in Tbilisi, Georgia, and currently an author and podcast host, among other things. Greetings, colleagues. Today, we're venturing into the intricate world of banking and finance law. Now, you might be wondering, why is financial literacy crucial for legal professionals? Often, lawyers have to deal with finance. We may not be business people, but we are in the business of helping business people. Whether it's opening up bank accounts for a new client or a client's new business, or dealing with loans or debts, lawyers often have to speak and understand the world of finance. So if you're ready to boost your legal English skills in the financial arena, you're in the right place. Let's dive into the dollars and cents of banking and finance law, where language meets the world of money. Basics of banking and finance law. Today, we're going to decode the language of money, crucial for any legal professional. Let's start with a foundational understanding of financial terms. Picture this as the groundwork. You wouldn't build a skyscraper without a solid foundation, right? Similarly, comprehending these fundamental concepts is pivotal for navigating the intricate world of banking and finance law. First off, interest rates, a term we encounter daily, whether applying for a loan or saving in a bank. Understanding the nuances of interest rates is like having a financial compass. It guides decisions on loans, investments, and more. Moving on to collateral, a security blanket for lenders. It's an asset pledged to secure a loan, providing a safety net for financial transactions. If the borrower fails to pay back the loan, the lender can seize the collateral. It acts as security for the loan. As legal professionals, grasping the significance of collateral is akin to understanding the chessboard of financial strategy. Now, credit scores. These numbers can wield tremendous power. They can influence not only your ability to secure a loan, but also the interest rates that you might be offered. Think of it as a financial report card. A good score opens doors to favorable terms. A bad score, it might close the doors. And let's not forget assets and liabilities, the yin and yang of financial balance. Assets are what you own, and liabilities are what you owe. When evaluating investment in a new company, for example, you want to look at their balance sheet and understand what assets they have, but also what liabilities they have. So why is the banking and finance literacy crucial? It's your toolkit for navigating legal scenarios involving contracts, negotiations, and even dispute resolution. It's about speaking the language of finance in the legal realm. Stick with us as we unravel more layers in the fascinating landscape of banking and finance law. This is not just about understanding words, it's about empowering you with the knowledge to navigate the financial seas confidently. banking transactions. Now that we've laid the groundwork with the basics of banking and finance law, let's dive into the dynamic realm of banking transactions. First up, deposit, a term that seems straightforward, but it's essential to understand the legal implications. Deposit can be used as a verb and a noun. For instance, today I deposited $5,000 into my bank account, or I want to verify the latest deposit in my bank account. This is money that you've added to your account. Next, withdrawal. This is the opposite. This is taking money out of the account. Of course, depending on the bank account, there may be withdrawal limits. There may be potential fees for withdrawing the money early, for example. These fees every account holder should be familiar with. Moving on to overdraft, a term that can send shivers down the spine. What happens when you spend more than what's in your account? Some bank accounts will have overdraft protection. So instead of denying the withdrawal or the payment, the bank will actually pay even though you have no money in your account or not enough money. However, there may be fees and consequences to that, depending on how the account is set up. Some banks will allow their customers to sign up for overdraft protection. Now, wire transfer, or sometimes we'll just say bank transfer. This is the electronic magic that swiftly moves money from one account to another. Legal nuances come into play here, especially when dealing with international transactions, which can also be kind of costly. Understanding the legal obligations in a wire transfer ensures smooth financial operations. Also consider who is paying for the fees. And let's not forget power of attorney in banking. This is a legal tool that allows someone to manage your financial affairs. It's a critical concept in banking transactions, especially for those who might require assistance due to various circumstances. As we explore these terms, remember our goal is not just to define them, but to understand the legal ramifications. The legal landscape of banking is intricate, and the better we comprehend it, the more confident we can navigate the financial waters. Boost your professional vocabulary with our Word of the Day free week course on 4 Business English. Elevate your language skills by receiving a daily email featuring a new word, complete with definitions and examples of using the word in context. It's the perfect way to seamlessly integrate learning into your busy schedule. If you enjoy the free week, consider diving into the year-long course for a deeper journey. At the end of the week, test your knowledge with our quiz and explore more about each word on the student pages. Just 5 minutes a day can make a significant impact on your language proficiency over the year. Ready to level up your vocabulary? Head to our website now and sign up for your free week. That's 4businessenglish.com/freeweek. That's 4 is in the number 4, business-english.com/freeweek. Or click the link in the show notes. Loan agreements. Our next stop on this journey through banking and finance law is the fascinating territory of loan agreements. Imagine as entering a contractual realm where financial deals are made and legal nuances play a crucial role. First on our list is our old friend interest rates. This is the cost of borrowing money. But it's not just a number, it involves legal intricacies. Interest rates are normally the annual percentage rate. So the interest rate is calculated over the period of a year. However, it may be charged more frequently than that. It's just when we talk about interest rates, we're talking about the annual rate, generally speaking. And don't confuse interest rate with interest. Interest is the money that you pay. For example, the interest rate may be 5%, which means you're paying $1,000. The interest rate is the 5%. The interest is the $1,000. And of course, that $1,000 that you're paying is in addition to the principal. The principal is the amount of money that you have to pay back that you were lent. For example, if the loan is for $10,000, the principal is $10,000. Now, over time, as you make payments, that principal will be paid down. It will get smaller and smaller, but you still have to pay the interest. Which brings us to amortization. This is a concept that determines how loan payments are structured. It's not just about paying back the principal. Legal aspects come into play, influencing the timing and amounts of payment. For example, if you have a mortgage on your house, your payment, probably a monthly payment, is going to be fixed for 10, 20, even 30 years. But part of that money is going to go towards the principal and part towards the interest. In the beginning, most of that money, that monthly payment, is going to go towards the interest. But by the end, most of it is going to go towards the principal. And you can look up mortgage calculators online to see how that works out. Moving on to covenant. This is a promise made in a loan agreement. So depending on the laws in your jurisdiction, sometimes they'll refer to it as a covenant. This is basically another term for a contract or a promise, a binding promise. And of course, default. This is what happens when a borrower can't meet their obligations and they fail to pay. Now, usually one mispayment doesn't lead to default. But if you miss a few mispayments or it's a certain dollar value, depending on the terms of the loan, then the borrower will be in default. The terms of the loan have been violated. Perhaps the borrower and lender can come to an agreement and continue the loan payments, or maybe the lender will consider the loan canceled and govern themselves accordingly, take other legal action. Understanding these terms isn't just about knowing the definitions. It's about grasping the legal gravity they carry in the context of loan agreements. Corporate finance. Our exploration of banking and finance law brings us to the dynamic realm of corporate finance. Here, the stakes are higher, the transaction is more complex, and the legal jargon, well, it's a language of its own. First on the corporate finance dictionary, equity. It's not just about ownership. It involves rights, preferences, and legal structures. Equity financing is very complicated, and it shapes the world of the corporate landscape. Next up, debt securities, a crucial component of modern corporate finance. These terms are associated with bonds and other debt instruments, where it's important to understand the rights of investors and the obligations of issuers. And of course, mergers and acquisitions, sometimes shortened as M&A, where corporate strategy meets legal tactics. There are many legal steps involved whenever there's a merger, from due diligence to drafting agreements, and how each phase contributes to the success of the total transaction. This is a very important legal field, and often law firms will have teams that just specialize in M&A. Moving on to capital markets, this is the financial arenas where corporations raise funds. Terms such as IPO, initial public offering, and secondary offerings are very important here. Often when a private company gets big, its goal is to go public and have an IPO. With modern companies like Facebook, this is often where the owners go from being maybe millionaires to being billionaires. And of course, corporate governance. This is the legal framework that ensures companies operate transparently, ethically, and in the best interest of their stakeholders. Or at least that's the ideal behind it. Understanding corporate finance is not just about numbers. It's about grasping the legal scaffolding that supports financial transactions in the corporate world. If you want to know more about these banking terms, consider our Elemental Legal English course. You'll find a whole unit on banking where I can go into a lot more depth and include a lot more examples than I can in a single podcast episode. So be sure to check that out, Elemental Legal English. Regulatory compliance and finance. Now that we've explored the financial landscape, it's time to put on our regulatory hats. In this section, we'll delve into the critical world of regulatory compliance and finance. First things first, regulations. These are not just rules, they are the backbone of the financial system. And when it comes to banking, they are almost endless. In the United States, you have Dodd-Frank Act. Internationally, you have Basel III. There are many other accords that influence or control or regulate how banking is done. I know in the United States that over my lifetime, regulation has increased, and of course, the number of banks has decreased. Banks seem to be getting bigger and bigger, partly to deal with the regulation. Unfortunately, small-town banks are seeming to disappear. Next, compliance. It's not just about a box to tick, it's a safeguard against legal troubles. Compliance is the bedrock of a robust financial system and the legal responsibilities that fall on financial institutions. If you're in the bank's legal department, a lot of your time might be dealt with compliance, making sure that the bank complies with the appropriate regulations and statutes. Some other acronyms: AML, anti-money laundering, which is a big part of modern banking, and also other terms such as KYC, know your customer, and CDD, customer due diligence. Another one is the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. In the United States, this is the regulatory agency that controls the stocks and bonds and those types of markets. They have tremendous influence and control over whether a company can issue new bonds or things like that. Another important term is consumer protection. This is not just about big players, it's about safeguarding individuals, the consumer. And of course, data protection. In the era of digital finance, safeguarding data is a legal imperative. Navigating regulatory compliance in finance is an important aspect of any business in this field.
Do you need to discuss legal matters in English? Are you looking to elevate your legal English skills without the hassle of in-person classes? Greetings, colleagues. I'm Timothy Barrett. I've taught legal English to over 1,000 students, from law students to practicing lawyers and judges. And now I want to help you. We're offering a free online course called Intro to Legal English. You can complete it from the comfort of your home at your own pace. In this course, you'll learn crucial legal English terms and concepts. We'll cover vocabulary used by lawyers, provide examples, and even review a famous court decision to boost your reading comprehension. But that's not all. You'll also get access to the Lexicon Workbook, a valuable resource with legal English terms and definitions. The Lexicon Workbook is yours to download and print, giving you the tools to study whenever and wherever you like. Many legal professionals struggle to communicate legal concepts in English. This course addresses that gap, providing you with the vocabulary you need to confidently discuss legal matters. By improving your legal English, you're not just learning words, you're enhancing your competence as a lawyer. Ready to take the next step in your legal career? Enroll in the Intro to Legal English free course today and register for our newsletter for ongoing resources. See how easily you can improve your legal English skills. Sign up now. Visit our website for more details. And remember, mastery of legal English opens doors. Don't miss this chance to excel in your legal journey. Go to 4LegalEnglish.com. That's 4 is in the number 4. LegalEnglish, no spaces or dashes, .com/free. 4LegalEnglish.com/free. See you in the first lesson.
Investment law. Now it's time to navigate the intricate world of investment law. Let's break down investment. It's not just about putting money in, it's a legal commitment. There are many terms associated with different types of investments, from stocks and bonds to mutual funds. Now, securities. In the realm of investments, understanding securities is key. Securities are financial instruments representing ownership or a creditor relationship with a corporation or a governmental body. Examples include stocks, bonds, and debentures. Securities are bought and sold in financial markets, allowing investors to participate in the economic performance of the underlying entity. Let's not forget fiduciary duty. It's not just a buzzword, it's a legal obligation. Fiduciary duty refers to the obligation of an individual, often a trustee or someone in a similar position of trust, to act in the best interest of another party. This duty involves putting the interest of the other party above one's own and involves loyalty, good faith, and due care. For instance, if you're on the board of directors or board of trustees, board of governors of some kind of entity, then you would have fiduciary duty towards that entity. You can't be looking out for yourself. You have to be looking out for that entity, that corporation, or whatever it is. Next up, insider trading. It's not just a plot line in legal dramas. It's a serious legal violation. Insider trading occurs when individuals buy or sell a security in breach of a fiduciary duty or other relationship of trust and confidence, while in possession of material, non-public information about the security. It's illegal and can lead to severe penalties, unless you're a member of Congress, of course. Moving on to derivatives. These are not just financial instruments, they're legal contracts. Derivatives are financial contracts whose value is derived from the value of an underlying asset, index, or rate. Common types include futures contracts, options, and swaps. Derivatives are used for risk management, speculation, and investment purposes. Derivatives played a major role in the 2008 global financial crisis. Now, portfolio diversification. It's not just a strategy, it's a legal consideration. Portfolio diversification is an investment strategy that involves spreading investments across various assets to reduce risk. The idea is that different assets may react differently to the same economic events, so holding a diversified portfolio can help mitigate the impact of poor performing investments. For instance, if you invested entirely in real estate and the real estate market is going well, then that's great. But if the real estate market is going poorly, then all of your investments are going poorly. So it would be better to invest some in real estate, maybe some in tech stocks, some in maybe growth stocks. In other words, to build a diverse portfolio, a collection of very different companies or industries, so that even if one company or industry has a hard time, your entire portfolio is not going to suffer just from that one industry or company. Hopefully these explanations of some of these terms was helpful to you. What other words from the investment field are you familiar with but have questions about? Let me know and maybe I'll cover those words in a future episode. Emerging trends in banking and finance law. As we wrap up our exploration of banking and finance law, let's cast our gaze into the future. The financial landscape is ever evolving and legal professionals need to stay ahead of the curve. Firstly, let's talk about fintech. It's not just a catchy term, it's reshaping the financial industry. We don't have time to get into it this episode, but it would be interesting to explore the legal considerations around fintech innovations, from blockchain to digital currencies, and also to discuss how regulators are adapting or trying to adapt to this technological revolution. I might have another episode just on cryptocurrencies and the blockchain. Let me know if that's something that you're interested in, and I'll make sure that I add it to the list to cover. Now, sustainable finance. It's not just a buzzword, it's a growing legal domain. Think about the legal aspects of financing sustainable projects and the increasing importance of environmental, social, and governance, often called ESG, criteria in investment decisions. This is still somewhat controversial, but it seems to be a growing trend. And the gig economy. The gig economy is transforming traditional employment structures, and it comes with legal implications in the financial realm. There are lots of legal challenges and considerations associated with the gig economy and its impact on banking and finance. There are many people that, instead of having full-time work, work as freelancers and take part in this gig economy. Cybersecurity is not just an IT concern, it's a legal imperative. The financial sector is addressing the legal challenges posed by cyber threats and the importance of robust legal frameworks for data protection. If a company doesn't take cybersecurity seriously, they may have a lot of liability on their hands. What questions do you have about today's episode? You can post those questions or any comments on the show notes. This is a great way to practice and improve your legal English skills. You can go to the website for, as in the number four, legalenglish, no spaces or dashes, .com. forlegalenglish.com. You can check out our blog articles and show notes for this episode, and check out the episode quizzes. It'd be fantastic if you could subscribe and give us a review. If you could leave us 5 stars and a nice comment, it would really help the algorithm and other people to find our podcast. If you leave a great review, I might even read it on the air. So start writing. The 4 Legal English podcast is adjourned. Don't miss the next docket call.